Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. Once again, I am Martin, joined by the King of the Casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. And Brett, you have the extreme pleasure of telling everybody who today's guest is.
Oh, boy, and I am so excited. We have an amazing singer. She's a songwriter. She's a restaurateur. She owns Sweetie Pies. She's got a new song, Ain't My Stuff Good Enough. We have Miss Robbie Montgomery. Miss Robbie, how are you?
Hi, I'm wonderful. And yourself?
Oh, fantastic. Honestly, I mean, we're honored to be on with you. It's truly our pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Such an amazing career. And you know, let's talk about Ain't My Stuff Good Enough. Great song.
Okay.
What made you bring it out right now?
Well, actually, this song was written for the ICATs and Murettes like 40 years ago. And back in those days, it was a dirty song, and they kind of banned it. They didn't play it. It was on Zay Records, and they didn't play it. And I always loved this song. I believed it was, you know, a good song. So when I got the opportunity on Welcome to Sweetie Pies, my storyline was I was going back in the studio, and I picked that song, and I never finished it. So after the show, I decided I would go and, you know, use this song. I wanted to get back in the music business. I was telling everybody, I've done everything. I've worked at the Grammys. I've sang behind people at the Grammys, but I've never got a Grammy. So I said, I want a Grammy. They said, well, you're too old. I said, well, I'm going to be the oldest person at the Grammys. So that's when I started trying to fix this song up. I thought it was good. I mean, it could stand. Most people think it's about sex, but it's not about sex. It could be about anything. You know, the things you do, the things you say, aren't they good enough? Everybody's a winner but me. So ain't my stuff good enough? So that's sort of how the idea came along.
Wow, well, that's quite a story.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's no question that that your stuff is good enough. So what is it like then to really be out front and center and to, you know, get a chance to really have your voice heard? I mean, I know you've done a little bit of solo work, but now, I mean, I hope this is going to lead to a full album.
I hope so, too. Well, you know, when I first got with Ike and Tina, I was a solo artist for Art Lassiter's band. And then we got the opportunity to do the background as an ICAT, and the song hit. So somebody was always offering me background work. So, you know, in the music business, you got to eat. So you have to take the work you get. So I was always offered some type of background song in the studio or working behind, you know, I worked behind Dr. John as a night tripper for 8 years. I worked behind Nancy Sinatra, working behind everybody. So I was always employed. So behind wasn't that bad. So now that I'm in the restaurant business, singing has always been my first love. Chicken is my second. But I'm back, you know, now I'm in a position where I can go back and sing again if I want to. And that's my desire right now, to do my music. Like I said, I never had a hit record or anything like that on my own. So this was my opportunity, and I took advantage of it.
That's wonderful that you've gone into two of the most difficult industries, I think, to succeed in, and manage to succeed in both. What is it that you can take from both that that you need to do to succeed? What is it that is in both industries you need to succeed?
Well, you know, in my life, I'm a firm believer in things happen when they're supposed to. I mean, had I done this earlier, I did sing earlier, but it wasn't the opportunity that I have now. So, but you just have to take advantage of things. And if it don't work, then move on to the next. I've never been a believer in failure. So if you put your whole heart in things, I think you can make them work. It might not work to the magnitude that you want it to, but if you want to do something, I always say, take a chance, take a shot. I mean, three strikes, you're out, but you can bat number four too, if you want to. So that's my, this thing is saying my internet is unstable. But I believe in doing what you want to do. If it makes you happy, I love singing. I'm a people person. I like getting out in the restaurant, hugging, kissing, taking pictures. So they're both fulfilling to me. It's not about money. It's just about doing things in your life that you desire to do. And that's where I am in my life, even though It took all my life, 81. So I'm still doing it though. So, and I'm happy at doing it. It's not about money all the time.
Do you think then that's really one of the secrets to you being in such fantastic shape at 81 is just your outlook on life?
I think so. I really do. And I see other people around me that have inspirations that they're going to do. I've got friends that say, I'm going to live to 104. So since they said they were going to live to 102, so I said I'll live to 104. So that's my goal. I'm aiming at it. I want to still, I say all the time, I got one tail feather left from Ike and Tina, and I'm still shaking it. So.
What do you do to take care of your voice? Do you do any sort of practice, anything, warm-ups, those type of things to take care of it?
You know what? I don't have the voice that I used to because I haven't used it for so many years. But when I was singing, we sang every night, so that was sort of a conditioner. But now the weather affects me. Everything affects me, but I just go right on because the voice I got is the voice I have to give you at that particular time. Some days I got good days, but I do little things, drink tea, days that I'm going to sing or something. Like right now, I'm preparing for a concert in St. Louis, October the 1st, and I'm doing all the things that I've been known to do back in the day to try to take care of my voice. So, and I'm hoping it works. Some days I wake up, I'm so hoarse, I can't talk, but I still could sing. So it's sing hoarse or not, you know, not at all. So you have to work with what you got, but it used to be better.
Well, I think your voice sounds terrific. I mean, it's got, you know, you got great power and great character in your voice.
Thank you.
You know,
so
and those
much.
Are two things that, that makes you a storyteller.
Okay, I'm going to remember that. I'm a storyteller, yes. Thank you.
Now, you know, one of the things, I mean, you talk about like in the old days and being able to, you know, play every night in practice. Like, I'm fascinated by the Chitlin Circuit, and I know that you played it. So can you just tell me a little bit about it, like about being on the road, like constantly, but just I've read books about it, and I just know that I've heard some of the stories and some of the craziness. So what was it like?
Well, actually, it was the only life we knew at that time. We lived on the bus. We had a bus. I don't know how many passenger bus it was, but we lived on that bus. At the back of the bus, Ike had like a rod iron where we hung our clothes. Everything we had was on that bus and with us. We didn't have apartments or anything because we traveled every night, almost every night. If it wasn't playing in a different city, we were traveling to that city. And things were segregated. It was the Chitlin Circuit. We played the same clubs, James Brown, Bobby Bland, Ike and Tina, whoever was out there in that circuit. We all played the same clubs, stayed at the same hotels, ate at the same restaurants because we weren't allowed as Black people to, you know, eat every place. So we all did the same thing. So that's how it became the Chitlin Circuit, because we did the same club, same hotel, same city, round and round and round, and it named it the Chitlin Circuit. But it was a way of life for us, and that was all we had available to us, was that Chitlin Circuit. Every once in a while, you might play a white hotel or a white club or something like that. But it was those same clubs over and over and over again. So that was considered the Chitlin Circuit. And everybody, all the entertainers played the same places. We didn't do anything different because that was available.
It's so shocking to think of the volume of talent that was available on that circuit. Like, I mean, you know, all those names that you talk about, absolutely stunning talent. And so, yes. I mean, it must have been such a hotbed of creativity in that regard, just, you know, for everyone hanging around together and just being able to kind of learn from each other.
Exactly. It was. I mean, Gladys Knight, Patti LaBelle, everybody was in that same little circuit. Sam and Dave, the Temptations. I mean, we all did the same thing. And we would be so happy when we would meet up on those shows that had more than one act. And most of the time, being with Ike and Tina, Ike was self-contained. So he had the Ikeettes, he had male vocalists. So we didn't really get a lot of opportunities to meet up with other entertainers. And when we would be on the show with somebody else, we would be so happy, like little kids, just really excited. It was a good time. And back in those days, they had the theater circuit that they had like 5 or 6 different acts on the same stage. And we would do that for about a week. So those were the good times when we would meet up with other acts. That was like playing the Apollo or, you know, Philadelphia, DC, Chicago, the Regal. They had all these places that had these theaters, which was a part of the Chitlin Circuit that we played all the time.
Now, I read too that you said that Ike always wanted you guys to like wear your clothes a certain way, and his rules were fairly strict. And then you had said once you started opening Sweetie Pies that you suddenly understood those rules of,
right,
of like having that. And so what other lessons kind of did you take from that, from those early days that maybe you didn't see as lessons at the time?
Well, I've got things like practice. I mean, we don't have to practice in the food business, but you got to perfect your craft, make sure that food is good. So there's a lot of things, making sure everybody got paid on time, being on time, having rehearsals, making sure that if the dress code is the same, and making sure that the people were courteous to other people, because we're the ones that's entertaining these people and these people are paying to come see us. Same thing with the restaurant. They pass by other restaurants to come to mine. And when they get to mine, I want them to be treated like royal. So these are things that I've learned from Ike. Business is business, and you have to treat it as a business and respect it as a business. He always said, if you take care of your business, business will take care of you. So these are lessons that I learned from him. I want my food to be the best. My song, when you come see me, I want to look like I did when I was 19. I want to dress and I want to be impeccable. I don't want runs in my stockings, my clothes hanging off. Ike was really, really strict about all that. And now I understand, because I'm trying to do the same thing. You got to have uniforms on. You got to be on time. All that stuff was very important now, but I didn't know it then.
Of course, at the end of the video for Ain't My Stuff Good Enough, there's a to be continued, which is fantastic. I do hope it's continued, but like when you look at it, are you writing new songs to kind of carry on that story? Is there older songs that you still want to kind of bring back?
I've got 2 songs that I wrote 40 years ago. One about my first boyfriend, Come Back and Finish What You Started. And then another one about my family, What Will I Do Without You? So I want to go continue with those songs.
Awesome. Yes. Now, of course, your family is so important to you anyways. Like, you're such a strong woman. Like, what does it mean to have all the support that you do have? Because I've also seen on the videos, I mean, there's so many people coming out in support of you and the music. Like, what does that mean to you?
That, you know what, I'm touched by that, because you always want to think people like you, but they show it. They come out and they say things that's encouraging to me. And I in turn try and turn around and lift somebody up, because it's a wonderful feeling to be loved. And these people reach out and tell me they think I'm strong. I inspire them. My family inspires them. I got people that saying, I started a business 20 years ago, and after listening to you, I'm going to pick that business back up. So it's really an honor and a blessing to think people even take the time to tell me this, because they don't have to. I mean, you know, just like if you meet somebody, you really don't have to remember their name. But I think it's an honor if somebody remembers your name, and the next time they see you, you know, they know you. That's really touching and a blessing. So I really believe in all that. And I'm just honored to be that person that they give all this gratitude to.
You know, I was looking a few years ago for a great recipe, I have to say, for mac and cheese. I ran into yours, by the way. I have to say, it's incredible. I'm sure I don't make it nearly as good as you do, but, you know, I mean, do you hear that type of thing all the time? Praise for
I hear it all the time. People tell me that the cookbook helped them out. And I always tell people, when you buy the cookbook, If you get stuck, call me up. I can help you out. But it's you know what? These are my mom's recipes. My mom was an excellent cook, and I used to help her cook. And so when I would come home, when people tell me that, it's touching because my mom, she used to make me go upstairs, and then she used to say, one day you're going to need to know this. And here I am today using that knowledge to make money. So it's really an honor. And then I love to cook, and I love to taste that food. And when people say, ooh, that macaroni was the best I ever had. Oh, my chest just boom, 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 boom.
Do you do a lot of the cooking? Do you do a lot of the cooking still? Do you do a lot of the cooking at the restaurant still?
I do. If I go in there and something is messed up, I get right back there and teach them how to redo it and to perfect it, because everything needs to be perfected. It has to be consistent. You can't come today and it's good and come back tomorrow and it's not. So I try to tell them how important it is to be consistent. Make sure it tastes the same every day.
How easy/difficult is that over multiple locations? Like, I know that I think that I might get a chance to go to Jackson, Mississippi next year, and which means that I'm sure hoping that I get to visit that Sweetie Pie's restaurant. But yes, how is it difficult to maintain that consistency over the locations?
It is. Because you got people that want to put their own spiel on things. And I don't really care about that. But if it's good, but then I like let them know this is my brand. And I want it, you know, like people see the chicken on TV, but they actually don't know how it tastes. But I don't want them coming thinking that chicken is the best and get there and the chicken is still alive. So I got to make sure that this is the best chicken that they've had. And it's really difficult because finding employees, and now especially during the COVID, it's really hard finding people. You try to tell people how to season this and they got their own way. They'll do it while you're looking. And then when you're not there, they do it their way. So it's kind of difficult having all these locations and trying to keep the food the same, or at least as good as the next one, you know. So it's kind of difficult. It's not like McDonald's where he got that 10 patties out of a pound and they just sprinkle a little salt. And I hate to say McDonald's, but you know, any franchise, they got their recipe that's the same. We cook to taste. I mean, the recipe might say 4 tablespoons of sugar and it might not be sweet enough. So you might have to add 6. So I actually cook to taste. I keep tasting until it gets where I think it should be. I'm going for it.
Do you have any live performances planned upcoming?
Yes, St. Louis, October the 1st at the Sheldon Theater. I just did one and down in Jackson, Mississippi with Bobby Rush. That was pretty good. And in St. Louis, I'm going to have a gospel singer, Erica Reed, and I'm going to have a comedian, what's his name?
Jay Lamont,
who's really, really funny. Have you ever seen Jay Lamont?
Yeah, actually, I have.
Okay, he's really, really funny, and then me. So the three of us are going to be there October the 1st. I like you. Come on by, you guys. Come on.
Boy, do I want to.
We do want to. We're all the way up in Canada here.
That's all right. That's not too far.
It's not too far. We can make a trip.
That's right.
Okay, come on. We'd love to have you. Love to have you.
Well,
but
I know.
I'm excited about that. I'm in rehearsal for that now. And then after that, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to be out on the road like I was with Ike and Tina 12 months of the year. That's over. But I'm going to plan my next one after this.
Well, and you get the fans who are, you know, from the show and the restaurant and of the music, and they all come together and, you know, get a chance to celebrate you. What kind of set list do you do?
I'm doing a lot of the old stuff. I do some Ike and Tina because everybody expects that. I do blues, you know, B.B. King, Ann Peebles, Dorothy Moore. I sing a lot of stuff that people know already, and then I throw a couple of mine in there. And I, like I say, I do some Ike and Tina, Ike Etz. I just put a little of everything that people expect. I don't know, they expect me to sing Ike and Tina. People always, you look like Tina. We look like each other. We're the same age. We learn everything together.
You know, what's it like then, of course, with your music now, kind of taking control over the music and having that and just being able to assert your personality on it?
You know, it's kind of weird because I'm used to people always picking the material and doing the arrangement on the music, or if, you know, if I'm singing behind somebody, but it's all on me. I got to pick the songs, and I try to pick songs that, that are familiar with everybody. I'm singing like Tennessee Whiskey. So I'm just kind of mixing it. Is that the name of a Tennessee Whiskey? I think that's the song. So songs that everybody knows. And it's kind of weird with me picking the choices, because if they don't like them, it's my fault. So I'm trying to take time and learn. The music business has changed so much since I was out there. I'm like a little kid. I got somebody telling me what to do. I don't know how to do it, get on social media. Another that I got other people helping me with that. So it's kind of, I'm kind of, I don't want to use the word illiterate, but it's the truth. I don't know what I'm doing, so I get other people to help me.
That's a smart lesson too.
Yeah. Yeah,
no doubt. How did you choose the band? Like, how did you get the performers for Ain't My Stuff Good Enough?
Well, in St. Louis, I kind of know a lot of the musicians, and they helped me. So what happened is, I recorded it at one time, and they told me it was old fashioned. So I went and got some young guys to put their spiel on it. And that's how we came up with that. They kind of did their young thing and my old thing. And we came up together with their rendition of the song. And I liked it. I mean, you know, I'm not too proud to say that their version was better than mine. And so that's what I did. You can't sell apples if they're buying oranges. So I got to kind of give them what they want. And everybody's like, that's old fashioned. That's about, you know. So I got these young guys to help me. And they, I think they did a wonderful job.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, the song does, like I say, it sounds great. And you certainly look great. And it's just so nice to be able to see you like out there. Where did you shoot it?
In Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. We're down here doing it.
Oh, very nice.
I'm in Jackson now.
All right. Well, stay there until next May.
I'll be here waiting on you. If not, come to St. Louis. October is sooner.
Yeah, that's right. We'll try.
Okay. And let me know if you're there.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Well, Miss Ravi, I know that we're running out of our time with you, and it's been so amazing to have you on. Please tell everybody how folks can keep up with you.
You can keep up with me on iTunes. I got to ask somebody. What else? Kwanzi, how can they keep up? YouTube?
Spotify.
Tidal. I don't know that one.
I don't know that one either. It's okay.
So just all of social media, Instagram. All the social media outlets. That's all I know to say. So, or come to my restaurant. I'm there cooking. I'll be waiting on you. I'm hugging, kissing, and taking pictures.
Awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, I definitely plan on being there. And we aim to see one of your shows at some point. It's been a true honor for us to have you on the show. Thank you. We appreciate it so much. And honestly, I hope that that you just have like another 81 years or at least till 104 of you know, staying strong and kicking ass.
All right. Thank you. Hey, kicking ass is my word. Thank you. It's an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thanks a lot and have a good day.
I'll see you October the 1st.
Oh, we will do our best. Okay. All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye.
Some better stuff.
Looking for some better stuff.
Hey.